Lunch with Leon.
And welcome to Lunch with Leon. And it really is 2026. We have another year of great guests lined up for the podcast. And thank you all for your great messages. I'm always fascinated to learn the different things you're doing when you're listening here. You tell me you're doing it on your commute, while you're out walking, sometimes with the dog, waiting for the bus, sometimes in the air, and also while you're pretending to be working. So, well, I think this probably is work, actually, just like reading a trade magazine or catching up with the news. So anyway, no matter how you hear Lunch with Leon, I'm really glad that you're listening to it. Please do subscribe if you can. Send us a review or a rating on your system. That really helps build the audience. Well, last year I was at an event in Kuala Lumpur promoting women in rail, and I shared the platform with today's guest. She was so amazing talking to that audience, I really wanted to come on here so you could hear her too. She's the Chief Operating Officer for Transport for Wales and also Chair of Women in Rail here in the UK, the wonderful Marie Daly. I asked her how she got into transport.
Okay, well, probably not the most traditional journey into transport like some people have had. So my world and my career started off at Direct Line and then into BT in more of a customer service contact centre, ADSL. Desk was what I used to run in the days, if people remember that, in terms of broadband. And from there, I moved with a employer to a company called Arval PHH, who were owned by BNP Paribas. So really interestingly, they were transport logistics. And that's probably the first experience that I had with transport, albeit from a quite distant perspective. And then I suppose the real role that got me into transport was my role at Network Rail as Operational Training Centre Manager based out of Gresty Road, looking after the signallers. And then a 5-year stint in Network Rail. And then from there, out of the industry again into the energy industry, which is interesting and very similar. So similar experiences in terms of engineering, retail, customer service, and then back to a role at Metrolink, really. And that was the journey into Transport for Wales, because while I worked for RITP Dev at my time at Metrolink during a franchise changeover, I went to Keolis Amey. And from there, working with Keolis Amey, they won the Wales bid. And I said I'd go down and have a look at the mobilisation, because I was quite vocal about how they mobilised up in Manchester. So they said, tell you what, then if you know what good looks like, head down to Wales and show us how it's done. So what the talk. And yeah, and I fell in love with Wales from day one. So I think I've shared this with you, but I was at the launch event by Carwyn Jones, the First Minister at the time, who talked about Transport for Wales and where it stood in the world of Future Generations and Wellbeing Act, what the outcomes of transport were. And in that moment, I was like, yeah, this is where I want to be. And 7 years later, I'm still there and I love my job.
Fantastic. Well, look, you're a great example to so many people, Marie, because firstly, there are arguably not enough people in transport who've come from outside experience. And I think anybody who's been in telecoms or been in energy is a huge benefit in the industry, aren't they? Because they've got a customer service ethos and they understand about all this stuff. I think that's really important to have a blend of people, you know, some with their transport experience and some with their knowledge from other industries. And I sometimes think we're a bit incestuous.
Yeah, I get that. Absolutely. And in terms of, it's really good because, as you know, the one barrier in transport can be, but we've always done it this way. And when you come from a different industry, you don't just take the lens of, but why? You actually go, why? Why are you doing that? And then you say, well, I used to see it done like that, but that's not how it's done in rail. Okay, so it does make you more curious. But I also say the balance to that is creating environments where we have network groups for things like gender. I always say you need a network group for people who are new to the industry, because the industry can be very kind to you from somebody who's outside the industry, but it can also be quite cruel, because, you know, I always say an industry has a cultural currency, and I think transport and rail cultural currency is operational knowledge. And that can often be a barrier if you've not been man and boy, girl and woman into the industry to really be able to talk with authority on subjects that people really want you to be able to talk to authority on. So I think it's a good thing, but I think you need to put your arms around people who come from different industries and look at what they bring and respect that as much as, you know, and as this industry moves to more of a customer and culture, I think, led approach, then I think that balance will come even more.
No, sure. And I often think about it because, just for the reason you say, it's easy to be sidelined into the "we always did it this way." We also did all sorts of other things the same way, didn't we? We also used to have diphtheria and polio, and we used to have a low life expectancy. And in fact, we changed things how we did things, didn't we? We changed how we did things people can have a better life. And look, you and I are talking today on the back of this terrible storm that we've had here in early January. You and I have talked about this before. One of the most wonderful things is that even some of the most uncooperative staff get their sleeves rolled up and get stuck in when the weather's bad. But I don't know how you feel. I sometimes feel that they get their sleeves rolled up and get stuck in when there's a crisis. But you actually quite like them to do it under normal business, because during a crisis, it's often the case we haven't got many passengers, and anybody that's venturing out on their own, they're on their own, aren't they? Because the public wants us to be ready when it all thaws out and gets back to normal.
Absolutely. Look, I'm one of those people who absolutely loves crisis management. So put me in gold on call. Tell me that we need to quickly develop a plan, and it's got to, you know, be adaptable. So I love that too. And in those moments, you see the absolute best of people in transport, because a lot of people, particularly operational people, come into it because actually they love that side as well. But you're absolutely right. When you're in those moments, you go, why haven't we solved this from the last time?
Yeah.
So why are we here again? Why is customer information not where it needs to be at a point? Why can't it be dynamic? Why can't we have colleagues getting that information in real time as well as customers? So I completely agree with you that, Leon, that what do we need to do to make that better? We've done quite a bit of work at Transport for Wales around the customer proposition and the intent of our proposition. Now, in a steady state railway, then, you know, that's quite easy to do. What it's not easy to do is when you're in disruption. But that's where we're really putting the challenge down, is to say that's when the customers need us the most. That's when they need our colleagues, they need our customer plans the most. So yeah, I agree that spending as much time and getting excited about actually some of the boring day-to-day stuff that needs to be done, changing, you know, our key route strategies, looking at our contingency plans, needs to be right up there, as well as managing major disruptions.
No, indeed. Well, look, you're right. The crises bring out the best in people. And of course, there's a sort of middle management problem there too, because we do have people in our industry that I've worked with who like to manufacture a crisis so they can solve it. Where I come from is I'd rather we didn't have the crisis in the first place. And nothing you can do about the weather, of course, it's going to be what it is. But there's plenty of other cases, aren't there, where people quite like to get a bit of a crisis going, because then they can look really good when they solve it. You know, we're a broad church, aren't we?
Definitely. I have a daughter who's just like that. I say to her all the time, don't cause the problem so you can tell me you fixed it. So yeah, it's human nature, isn't it? And sometimes it's easier to stay in that space than actually getting into some of the real tricky issues. So
it is indeed. And the other one that, I mean, I am just fascinated about, which is the public expects quite a lot out of us when the weather is bad and when there's huge disruption. And people I, you know, find are generally very reasonable. But at the end of the day, we've got big trains and big buses and humans, and there is just a limit. We can't whistle up extra staff or extra capacity at no notice, can we? Because the laws of physics are the laws of physics, and if the train is an hour away, well, it's an hour away, and it's not going to be here in 5 minutes. It's going to be here an hour's time. And I try and believe that if you fill people with enough information, they'll be happy about it. But at the extreme end of that, there are people who expect things to happen almost miraculously.
I love the saying that when people buy a ticket, they buy the promise of your timetable. And I take quite passionately that I need to know how I deliver that timetable in all circumstances. And I agree, you know, we can't know every single scenario, but I think we can learn from history. So a lot of the work we do is to look at previous storms and say, actually, which storm most relates to what the you know, the EWOT or the weather warning is telling us, and what would we want to learn from last time. And I think we need to get better at that, because no, we can't always deliver exactly what the customer wants in that time, but what's within our control, I think we can get a lot better at. And customers are more demanding because they should be, and they're more demanding because they can get live information like that. So times have changed and the railway industry has to move with that. So I absolutely agree that it's not always easy to deliver exactly what everybody wants, but I think we can be doing more to really deliver on what's within our control.
Yeah. One of the things we discovered in London, of course, was that actually the passengers had access to better information than the staff did.
That's my biggest frustration, Leon.
That is.
So we rolled out tablets to colleagues 18 months ago, and it was meant to be, that was it. This was the fix. And it was, you know, it was going to solve it all. And then it still hasn't. And that's a really big frustration that we're getting into now, because it is so important that you are giving the colleagues the information as an organisation to support those customers, for the customer and the colleague. So completely agree with that. We are working really hard for that to be the case, and using colleague voice to drive that.
Indeed. And bearing in mind that our workforce is so dispersed, they're not sat looking at a live screen the whole time. They're out there, they're driving, they're cleaning, they're working in the workshop, talking to passengers, whatever it is that they're doing. So they're not actually glued to the screen the whole time. So there's them updating their own information. And the one I don't think any of us ever tried to fix, there's a default position with staff, which I always try to overcome. And the default position is that when a member of staff is on the back foot, there's a slight tendency to blame the organisation. And there's a sort of tendency to say, well, we don't get told anything. Nobody tells us nothing. We don't know. No, don't go and ask me. No. They're not being unhelpful. It's just that in the face of somebody saying to them, what's happening? Mm-hmm. You know, why don't you know? In theory, you want them to say, I'm sorry, I will try and find out for you. Stay with me for a minute and let me see what I can find out. There's a sort of terrible tendency, though, to say, I don't know anything. They never told me anything. Nobody's ever tells me anything. We know nothing. And when I talk to staff about that, why do you say that? They say, well, we didn't know what to say. Mm. And you really want to program them, because the place where it does work is in aviation. The captain never says to you, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to fly this. I don't know what is happening. The captain on a plane is always full of sincerity. And we have got a problem. We're not going to be able to take off for an hour. And I'm doing my best to improve on that. And you think, oh, that's all right then, because he's doing his best. And of course, it's a different sort of job. But I've always wished I could get people to be more proud, if you like, of the organisation. And so I work for a really good company. And look, I don't know what's happening, but there's somebody somewhere trying to fix this. And as soon as I can find out what it is, I'll let you know where you want them to get to.
And I think if an organisation that you are giving them the tools to do that, and they haven't got the answer, but they know they're going to get it, then I think people will be more willing to do that. And I agree that you get that in different pockets. But I'm proud to say that I spend quite a lot of time on the patch. I do special events. I've worked them in the past. And actually, when I've been in that situation, as you've just said and described, when you haven't got the answer and you don't know where you can quickly get the answer, sometimes you're in that, oh, we're in it together type scenario. And it's easier to go there. But yeah, so I think making sure people have got the tools to be able to do their job, and if they haven't, they know where to go and get them, is important to empower them and give them the confidence to have that conversation. But I saw so many people who are so passionate, as I am, about making sure they have that information to be able to help the customers, because makes them feel better at their job as well. But yeah, I think being proud of the company that you work for, and for us in Wales, that sometimes is a lot easier than other places, and a lot of people share that with us, because you've got that national element and people know that actually, you know, the network is reinvesting back in Wales, and they're really proud to say, you know, I am a Welsh person and I work in Wales. So we do have a bit of a USP with that.
No, sure. No, I bet that's very important, actually, because people are proud of their country, quite rightly. And I think it's nice when that pride overflows into it. You have reminded me, I don't think I've told you this when I saw you last time, I love being out at special events too. And I do remember doing Gay Pride at Finsbury Park one summer. Because when it tips out in a big way. So you've got this particular case, a line of people for the Finsbury Park station and a line of people for the special buses. We were boarding the buses through both doors in order to get as many people on as quickly as possible and get them away. And somebody just said to me, is this the bus for central London, and it was the other way.
Yeah.
So I just reached out with my hand and I just pointed and I said, no, it's that way. And as I did that, I hit somebody in the face. Not only was it somebody, it was a lady. And as she put her hand up to her face where I'd hit her with my hand accidentally, the blood started to pour out of down her fingers. Oh, my God. And of course, she'd had quite a lot to drink. And I said, oh, I'm really sorry. And she just held her hand up to her face. Oh, that's all right, dear. Don't worry. And off she went. So
just lucky that somebody recording that, Leon. It could have
changed. It was before the days of all that. But of course, it is a reminder in your energy to try and help people. And gesticulating is an international way that we show people. And so I've always told my people on that, you know, keep your hands to yourself at this stage, because you are trying to be helpful. You can get yourself into trouble. So yeah, fortunately, it was never recorded. It didn't appear on social media. TfL bus chief assaults passenger.
I was trying to do that headline then, yeah, as you were saying it.
It would be good, wouldn't it? And look, that sort of quite neatly takes us on to all the stuff that you're doing, because, I mean, like in Scotland and in England and in the regions and so on, the budget pressure is not very pretty, is it? As you know, in England, there's the big push now on bus franchising and also the bringing the railways back into public ownership. And it seems to me we're going through quite a good phase at the moment, because people are excited because they want the change.
Yeah.
And they're sure that the change will bring an improvement. But we know, don't we, the economic situation is awful. And there is an argument, in fact, David Leader on this podcast ventured that on bus, that before franchising and electrification is complete, the government will have run out of money. And I think in Wales, the budget isn't a walk in the park either, is it?
No, and I think we, as you say, that the climate overall is a challenging one. And I think it probably has been for a few years post-COVID. So I think that's the reality. And if I think about the conversations, particularly since I went from working at Keolis Amey's in the private sector to then TfW coming in public ownership in 2021, the narrative has been really strong that this is about driving down costs and driving up revenue. And I think that's got to still be our narrative, and it is still our narrative today. It's very much about how do we drive out costs from what we do, from infrastructure projects to day-to-day costs, to delivering, using more innovation to deliver, using new technology to deliver. And, you know, that's been a big part of it. And then how do we drive up revenue, better understanding our customers? And that's probably led us to where we are in Wales. We introduced a new operating model back in 2022. And that was under the mission of one network, one timetable, one ticket, one team. And that's very much around, actually, how if we start with customer and we become mode agnostic, what is the right thing to do? And what could that do to subsidy? And what does that mean in terms of that one network around what we'll deliver for customers? Do customers care if it's a bus or a train or a bike? They probably do. But in terms of us being able to say what is the best possible use of public money to deliver that service, and how can we make it a seamless and a good service for customers, then that's where we want to be. And I think there, easy words to say, big challenges to deliver, but that's big on our agenda in terms of looking at holistically across Wales and borders. What does one network look like? What would that look like for customers? How could we say, what is the purpose of rail? And I think that's a much bigger question than in Wales. I think that's going to be a big question across the whole of the UK as bus franchising comes more prominent, and we see the stuff that's happening with mayors. GBR. So I think, yes, it is there's a lot to go at, I would say, and there's lots of opportunity as we look at more holistic transport system.
I mean, I saw it was in the press recently, wasn't it, that Ken Skates, the Transport Secretary, had issued some warnings about that the funding wasn't limitless. But I still got the impression that the Welsh Government is being as brave as it might reasonably be to try and push on. I mean, especially on rail, I was going to say that I like it when politicians are brave. I mean, it seems to me I like it when politicians are brave, and it seems to me in the Welsh Government there is a bit of bravery going on in terms of investment and driving things forward ahead of the patronage that is hoped for to support it and to drive the economic growth and jobs and all the things that go with it. So I like it when they're brave.
Well, Welsh Government are our shareholders, and as shareholders go, they're really good shareholders because, as you've just rightly said, they are passionate about the outcomes of transport. So they're not, they are looking at the cost of transport, but they're looking at actually what the outcomes can deliver. And that's why, you've got things like the Future Generations Act, and it is intrinsically in the DNA of what we do as a purpose-driven organisation. And that's what gets me sort of out of bed in the morning, because I fundamentally believe our shareholders want to do the right thing for our customers, for the people of Wales, to really deliver a service that will connect them to prosperity, fun, work. It is absolutely in all the conversations we have.
And you also have this issue, of course, as we see in other parts of the world and indeed in the country, this amazing contrast between some really busy urban centres and some really thin rural areas where the requirements are just entirely different. But the requirements might be different, but the costs are the same because a gallon of diesel is a gallon of diesel, and a driver's hour of pay is a driver hour of pay, isn't it?
And I won't politically go there, because there's certain places of our network that you will go, actually have a look at that, and rail will be what stakeholders will absolutely want. But if you think about it from a customer growth and where you can invest and where's the best return on that investment, you might decide on another mode. And I think that's the maturity of the conversation that will come over the next couple of years as we look at that one network. But at the minute, people are very protective of, this is my rail network, and and actually this is the subsidy that requires for that. And I do hope we get to a mature place where we can have that subsidy conversation as a whole across all modes, and then that might drive to different decision making. But I think to do that, and we've done some great work, but I think we need to do more as an industry and internally at TfW as well, is around customer segmentation. You've got to know your customers, not just the customers you've got today, but the customers that are there for the future and who are not using you now. So they come from all generations, not just those school leavers, but who are choosing the car today? Why are they doing that? And what are the barriers to them doing that? And actually, that will help shape that debate as well. But I think we've got a lack of maturity around that customer segmentation, and customer information and insight approach, which I know the industry is dealing with as part of GBR, but I think there's more for us to go at.
No, for sure. The real thing I'm heartened about in talking to the minister on rail is that in a really difficult government situation more widely, the nationalisation of rail is still incredibly popular with voters. And I've got some concerns because, for example, when the government says simpler fares, I think the public hears cheaper fares. There is no doubt that in the simplification of the national rail fares across the country, in the simplification, some of the very cheaper ones will disappear because that'll be balancing for the loss of some of the more expensive ones. And I know it's popular, and I think population is very much looking forward to an improved rail network. But there isn't an economic miracle, is there? The fares will still be the fares. We'll still require to cover some of our costs out of fares revenue. And at the end of the day, a mile of track is a mile of track. And so I think the government nationally has got quite a difficult job of delivering something the public really wants, but making sure that the public sees a benefit and that it's not just the same old again. Does that chime in Wales as well?
Yeah, and I think that there is a bit of that narrative about public good, private bad, and actually it's all going to be better. And I think we need to move away from that narrative, because actually it's the same people who are going to be delivering it in the main. And I don't think you'll bring people on the journey if they think actually what we've been doing is wrong, because I don't think what we have been doing is wrong. But what I hope from GBR is we see a really clear direction of travel of, sorry, excuse the pun, but in terms of where we need to go as an industry, and that taking that fragmented rail system and making that more of a holistic view. And I really hope we get to a more one system, not just from an infrastructure and operator perspective, but we look at a one system through transport. For me, Great British Railways could be Great British Transport, because you're not going to have Great British buses. It's almost like, actually, where are we trying to get to long term? And I think it's about bringing it together as one system, and you've got what we're doing in Wales, very similar to what's happened with some of the mayors that are happening, is disrupting sort of thinking, trying to drive that change around what is the opportunity this brings us in the future. And I think the watch out, and we faced it in 2021, is when you come under public ownership, is the public and customers want more.
No.
So they and you've almost sold a little bit that narrative, haven't we, that it is going to get better, and it, but what are all the key component parts that are going to make it get better? And I think that's the opportunity that we need to stay focused on. What would we all, you know, and I've heard Sir Peter Hendy and Heidi Alexander talk about actually what are the key things that we need to solve to get the foundations in place to get better, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, and I've also said to more than one politician in the English regions recently, don't forget, you've spent the last 20, 30 years criticising the bus and the rail service. As it's brought into public ownership, you're the ones who will be criticised. Are you geared up for taking responsibility for this? Because the passengers will look for the person responsible, won't they?
Yeah, and I think what I'm really keen to hear, and I know the plans are being developed around, we're talking about we want to get to a 90% on time to three across the whole network, and we want to get to 2% cancellations. I'd like to see some more customer metrics in there and more ED&I metrics, as you know, just as a that conversation drives us more to customer and culture currency. But I think for me, what I want to know from those plans is we're not delivering that today. So what are the barriers to us not delivering that today? And then what are we going to do about that? Because
Yeah.
that's the narrative that I'm yet to, and I know it's there and I know conversations are happening, but I think that's a very important narrative to be sharing with the public now.
No, for sure. And the other thing I was just going to remind you of is the last time you and I had much chance to talk at length. That's because we were happily in Kuala Lumpur
Yeah.
at the Malaysian Women in Rail Conference, where you and I both had a slot on the stage. But never mind the slot on the stage. I was thinking more about the conversations we had in the evening. But I just wonder, and I'm not sure how much my listeners know, which I do, about all the work you've been doing in Women in Rail over several years. And I know that's very important to you personally, and you're a big champion for it in Wales. So I got on an earlier episode of this podcast a couple of episodes ago last year. I had a question from the floor about whether I thought we were making any progress towards 50-50 men and women as transport professionals. And my challenge was, I think I've always thought that the gender balance of the staff ought to reflect the gender balance of the users.
Absolutely. And that for me, I always link that to customer growth, and there's lots of research to that, because actually then you can connect with your customers if your staff are able to connect and are able to represent. So I agree. So it might be more on buses, it'd probably be more like 80, 20 then, wouldn't it? Yeah. On rail, unfortunately, it probably would be more like 40, 60. But ultimately, if you did have more of that representation, it might help shape sort of the strategies that are being made as well. So no, I support that. I don't think we should go for that binary 50-50. You could look at the population, but you know, you can look at the role of the NHS. You're always going to have a higher gender split there, and there's a natural piece to that in terms of society and percentage of women. So yeah, I think I would be supportive that actually we should be reflecting our customer base and our industry.
Yeah. We've made fabulous progress on EDI in the same way we've made amazing progress on accessibility. But I was just reminded of something recently where I was at an event, and frankly, of course, something I'm getting used to now, which is being the oldest person in the room. And a lot of young activists, people pressing for greater diversity in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And also for greater accessibility. And I remember talking with somebody, as it happens, a wheelchair user, but somebody who's been an advocate for greater accessibility on the whole public transport network for many years. And I have to admit to say, do you know, if I consider where we've got to from where we started, we've made phenomenal progress, both on the accessibility as well as on the diversity. We made phenomenal progress. I was on the verge of saying, come on, everybody, just be grateful because we've miraculously made progress. And she said to me, well, because the trouble is, your baseline is a different place to their baseline. their baseline is like only 5 or maybe 10 years ago. And the amount of progress we've made in that time is actually rather less. So for you, from nowhere to somewhere is a big step. But for the younger people, they've only seen a small proportion of that progress. So the reason they're frustrated is because the industry only seems to have done a bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, that is such a clear thing. It's a tragedy of being old, of course, but
yeah. And I think absolutely so. And I wouldn't just take that from, it's not that you're old, Leon, at all. It is totally that your starting point is right. So it's whatever your starting point is. And when people say to me, we have progressed, I always think, I wonder where your starting point was. Mm-hmm. And we have progressed from my starting point. So 10 years ago, the ED&I landscape didn't look anything like it looks today. It's flooded today within transport. And that's a fantastic thing. But you're right, over the last year or two, you see, we do a survey with ENSA. And we did one last year and we saw that the percentage of women moved to 17.4%. Back in 2018, it was 16.3% or along those lines. And, you know, actually, we're getting excited about that movement of 1.4%. But that's seen people leave and more people come in. So there's, you know, there's lots of figures that sit in there. But for a lot of people, you know, me getting excited that I sit on a board with three other women, you know, for my daughters, they'd be like, well, why wouldn't you? And I always use them as a really good benchmark. And we need to look at the future generations around where they're going to view us, which I think you were probably faced with, because actually I'm like really proud to be, you know, the COO of in a transport company, but that should just be expected. That shouldn't be something that, oh, I'm a woman and I, you know, I've made it here and, you know, but there is still that, but you're right. It is all about your starting point, but I do think we have made some really, really good progress. I think the norms that were at 10 years ago are no longer the same norms in terms of, you know, panels, representation, role modeling. So there's lots of good things that are happening, but there's so much more to go at. I do agree with that.
And just thinking about women in rail, Marie, Great British Railways is coming down the track, literally. Is this going to be a good thing for women in rail?
So last year we developed our business plan, our 2-year business plan. And as part of that, there's 4 pillars, which are attract, promote, engage, and support. And they're very much aligned to your sort of Taylor Swift era tour, all generations, all life cycle of a woman within the rail industry. And we're quite excited that the backdrop to that and the context of that is GBR. So we're really lucky, Sir Peter Hendy, Heidi Alexander are given us access to be able to give our viewpoint and that viewpoint of women within the industry. And Heidi opened our conference at the end of last year, which is really important. And I think if I was to pull out the one thing that our membership voice is asking us for is we have now got a single shareholder in Heidi and she's a woman. So we're going to take advantage of that. So that's good. But, you know, equally it is about allies and people using their privilege. It's not just about being a woman and therefore we'll make the difference. It is about how we move that movement forward together. But I think one of the key things as we look at what the future of GBR is and the role of the CEO and the recruitment process for that is our members are calling out and almost demanding that we have a reset and that the recruitment process for that role is transparent. You know, the individual gets it. We know why they've got that, you know, and it's focused on customer and culture as much as it's focused on operational knowledge. So I think that's our one big ask that we're hearing from members, that we're really keen to see that person's agenda and where they're going to take the industry and then how they're going to use the voice of Women in Rail and their members to really drive the industry forward and take that 17.4% to the representation figure that we talked about earlier.
Extraordinary. Well, look, Marie, I wish you good luck with that, because these are challenging things. And as we talked about before, we've made some fabulous progress, but there's loads more to do. And look, with you championing it, I think we're in a very good space. So it's been a while since we saw each other, so we better catch up somewhere somehow if we can. But in the meantime, we've had this lovely conversation, and thank you very much indeed for sparing the time to join us. This has been Lunch with Leon, which is produced in association with Passenger Transport. Transport magazine. Do go across to passengertransport.org. Find out all the latest news that's happening on transport, passenger transport here in the United Kingdom. We'll be back with another episode very soon, but I really want to thank my great friend and fabulous podcast star, the Chair of Women in Rail and the Chief Operating Officer at Transport for Wales, Marie Daly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leon. Pleasure.
Lunch with Leon featured Marie Daly in conversation with Leon Daniels. Please leave us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcasts. It is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine.